The Cut Your Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are taking on, well, one of history's most stubborn cliches, the Puritan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for most of us, that word just conjures up a very specific image, you know, a tall hat, a really dour expression, and just a general disapproval of fun.
Exactly. That stereotype, the black-clad witch-hunting zealot, is precisely what Francis J. Bremer sets out to demolish in his fantastic work, Puritanism. A very short introduction.
So that's our mission today.
It is. We're going to try to move past that flimsy, flat image and understand the Puritans as they really were, which was a complex, incredibly dynamic, and very intellectual movement.
And this isn't just, you know, some dusty historical curiosity.
Not at all.
Bremer argues, and I think really convincingly, that the 17th century movement profoundly shaped the entire modern Anglo-American world. Their ideas on everything from work ethic to civil society, It's all just woven into our identity today. You really can't understand the United States without understanding the Puritans. It's a necessary historical corrective. So we're using Bremer's decades of scholarship to answer that one central question for you. Who were the Puritans, really?
Right. Who were they?
We need to look at the complexity of their beliefs, the sheer ambition of their transatlantic experiment, and crucially, why their own inner tensions ultimately decided their fate.
And when we want to answer that question, we turn to Francis J. Bremer.
He is, without a doubt, the preeminent historian of 17th century Puritanism. He's professor emeritus of history at Millersville University.
And he's not just a general historian. He has spent his entire life in this period. We're talking about the author of major works like The Puritan Experiment, a definitive biography of John Winthrop.
And he was the editor of the Winthrop Papers.
The Winthrop Papers. So he hasn't just read about the history. He has lived inside their letters, their diaries, their sermons.
And that deep immersion gives him such a unique perspective. Bremer approaches Puritanism from the inside out. He's not really focused on just the politics or the economics.
He wants the lived experience.
The lived religious experience, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
He wants us to grasp the theological motivations, the fear, the hope, the spiritual rigor that drove their entire lives.
Which is why this book is such a perfect guide for us. It takes this huge, often caricatured history and just distills it into an accessible, scholarly story that, well, it gives the movement back its dignity and its nuance.
If you want the real story, this is where you start.
Okay, so let's unpack Bremer's argument. The core purpose of the book is to give us a balanced, historically grounded account that just overturns all those myths we carry around.
Mm-hmm.
He shows that the movement was, all at once, pious, intellectually sophisticated, socially radical, and for its time, pretty revolutionary.
And he traces this journey that's really driven by a sense of disappointment. It all starts in Elizabethan England, where
right.
the English Reformation is sort of stalled. It stopped halfway.
Right.
To the Puritans, the Church of England kept too many, what they called popish elements.
And what does that mean exactly? Popish elements.
It just means practices they associated with Catholicism. Things like ornate robes for priests, prescribed prayers from a book instead of spontaneous ones, and the whole power structure of bishops. They wanted to get back to a church based purely on scripture.
And that dissatisfaction, it really boiled over under the Stuart monarchs, James the Sixth and then Charles the Sixth.
Oh, absolutely. The Puritans struggled against the established church, and that struggle was a major factor leading to the English Civil War. It started as a religious argument, but it became a political powder keg.
And that desperation is what leads to the next phase of their story, the transatlantic part.
Yes, the Great Migration. In the 1630s, when things got unbearable, around 20,000 settlers left. And they weren't just sailing for a better job. They sailed because they truly believed England was beyond saving.
Their goal was to build a model society in New England, the famous city upon a hill.
Exactly. And Bremer shows us how that society was built on this foundation of core theology, predestination, covenant theology. These ideas shaped everything.
Everything from the church structure to how they viewed the family, which they called a little commonwealth.
And the key thing to remember is that Puritanism was never one static thing. It was constantly evolving, full of fierce internal debates.
So Bremer's ultimate goal isn't really to defend them.
No, not at all. It's to make sure we understand their profound contributions. Things like governance by consent, the need for education, and the philosophical seeds of the American democratic temperament.
So let's dive into the details, and I think we have to start with their identity. Bremer calls them the hotter sort of Protestants, which I think is just a perfect description.
It really is. It defines them not by a list of rules, but by their zeal, their intensity. They were all about this deep, personal, experiential faith.
You had to have evidence of a real conversion.
Yes. And that urgency immediately helps us start dismantling the caricature, that image of the joyless fanatic. It's largely false.
Okay, so let's debunk some myths.
Well, for one, Bremer confirms they were not against marital intimacy. They saw it as a gift from God. They didn't just wear black. Black was expensive cloth for formal occasions. They allowed for recreation, as long as it was moderate.
So it wasn't about being against pleasure, it was about moderating it.
Exactly. Their goal was sanctification, finding divine purpose in every single part of life, even the mundane.
And that's where the theology becomes so vital. Let's take predestination. The belief that God had already chosen who was going to be saved, the elect, and who was damned. Now that sounds incredibly passive, doesn't it? If your fate is sealed, why even try?
You would think so, wouldn't you? But Bremer shows it had the absolute opposite effect. It created this intense psychological pressure.
How so?
Because you couldn't know for sure if you were one of the elect. So you were constantly engaged in this deep self-examination, searching your life, your actions, for any sign that God had placed you in the covenant of grace.
So that's what drove their famous work ethic and seriousness. It was a search for proof.
It was. And that idea of an agreement, a contract, extended to their whole society through covenant theology.
Right. So what did that mean in practice for them?
It's this idea that God relates to humanity through contracts. So on a personal level, there's the covenant of grace. But socially, the whole colony of Massachusetts Bay believed they had a national covenant with God.
A contract with God for the whole country.
For their whole society, yes. They had a sacred duty to build a model godly community. If they succeeded, God would bless them.
Yep.
If they failed, they expected divine punishment. Crop failures, disease, you name it.
Wow. Just imagine living under that kind of pressure. That high-stakes mindset really takes us back to their origins in England.
Right. They were so unhappy with the Church of England, the Elizabethan settlement, which they saw as this incomplete, watered-down Reformation.
They wanted to purify it.
That's it. Which is why something like the Vestiarian controversy was such a big deal. It wasn't just about refusing to wear certain robes.
It was about purity.
It was about principle. It's also why Presbyterianism became so popular among them. This idea of replacing the hierarchy of bishops with local elders, which they felt was more biblical.
But the real crisis point came under King Charles I and his Archbishop William Laud.
Yes. Laud championed something called Arminianism.
Which is what exactly?
It's the belief that salvation depends on human free will cooperating with God. And for Puritans, that was a direct challenge to predestination. It felt like a step backward toward Catholicism because it minimized God's absolute power.
So when Laud started using the royal courts to punish Puritan dissenters,
that was the last straw for many. They became convinced the Church of England was beyond saving. It wasn't about purifying it anymore. It was about escaping it.
And that escape was the Great Migration. 20,000 people. Bremer is so clear on this. They wanted religious liberty, yes, but specifically the liberty to build their own perfect, biblically based society.
And that ambition is captured perfectly by John Winthrop in his famous City Upon a Hill sermon, which he gave on the ship over. He framed their whole project as this sacred drama being watched by the entire world. They weren't just settlers. They were actors in a religious epic. That sense of mission is really the origin of American exceptionalism.
And the society they built reflected that intensity. To be a full church member, you had to be a visible saint.
Meaning you had to stand up in front of everyone and give a credible, profound story of your personal conversion. It created a kind of spiritual elite.
And yet, at the same time, they built these structures that maybe accidentally fostered a democratic mindset, like the town meeting.
Yes, the town meeting was the crucible for all civil and religious decisions. And even though voting was restricted, the principle of governance by consent was there from the very beginning.
But trying to maintain that kind of perfect uniform community, it was bound to explode.
Yeah.
And Bremer shows this through these two critical cases of dissent. First up, Roger Williams.
Right. Williams was a Puritan minister, but he was banished. He argued for the complete separation of church and state, saying the government had no business enforcing religious rules.
And he also insisted they had to pay Native Americans fairly for the land,
which challenged the very foundation of their settlement. He went on to found Rhode Island as a haven for true religious liberty. It's incredible irony, really.
It is. And then there was Anne Hutchinson. She was even more of a threat in some ways.
A huge threat. She claimed she received direct personal revelation from God. And if God speaks directly to you, why do you need to listen to the minister's sermon?
Right. It completely undermines their authority.
Her ideas threaten the entire social order by putting personal experience above communal authority. She was banished for, essentially, spiritual insubordination.
And as the century went on, you can see the experiments starting to fray at the edges. Conversion rates went down with the second generation.
Yes, the children just didn't have that same fire as their parents who had crossed an ocean for their faith. This led to the Halfway Covenant in 1662.
Which was a compromise.
A huge, controversial compromise. It allowed the children of members to be baptized and become halfway members, even without a dramatic conversion story. It showed the original dream was already fading.
And the tragic climax of all that anxiety and decline was, of course, the Salem witch trials in 1692.
Bremer sees that not as some strange anomaly, but as the explosion of a community under immense stress, social, political, and religious. They were a community under siege, lashing out in fear.
It's such a complex story. So let's pull back and look at the key themes Bremer reveals that, you know, still echo today.
Okay, the first big one is that Puritanism was a spectrum, not a monolith. We say the Puritans like they were all the same.
But they weren't.
Not at all. You had Presbyterians, Congregationalists, Separatists,
yeah,
all with different ideas. Recognizing that internal debate is just key to understanding any movement then or now.
When we simplify, we lose the truth. And the second theme is that huge tension between individual conscience and communal order.
We saw it with Williams and Hutchinson. How do you balance one person's accountability to God with the community's need for stability and uniformity?
That tension is absolutely timeless. It's the same fundamental argument we have today about personal freedom versus the public good.
Whether it's public health or online speech, it's the same debate. The Puritans were just the first to have it on American soil.
And third, the idea of the covenant as a structuring principle.
Yes, this idea of a voluntary binding agreement. It applied to their faith, their church, and their whole society.
And that idea of a mutual compact, of governance by consent, you can draw a straight line from that to modern American democratic thought.
It's the intellectual bedrock. Our political documents have deep religious roots.
So let's talk about some of the powerful ideas, the quotes that Bremer pulls out.
Well, the first one perfectly captures their zeal. The hotter sort of Protestants. It's not about rules. It's about spiritual temperature, intensity.
And then there's their mission statement from John Winthrop. We shall be as a city upon a hill. The eyes of all people are upon us.
That one line just captures their incredible ambition and their profound sense of accountability. They felt they were performing for God and for the entire world.
And I think this next one is so important for correcting the stereotype. The Puritan goal was not to withdraw from the world, but to engage with it and sanctify it.
Yes. This explains the work ethic. Work wasn't a curse. It was a divine calling, a form of service to God.
That gives their famous rigor a whole different meaning. It's about passion, not repression. And finally, the one that shows they weren't totally rigid.
From the pastor John Robinson, "The Lord hath more truth and light yet to break forth out of his holy word."
I love that.
It counters that image of static belief. They believed in ongoing discovery, that scripture was a living document. That's why they founded universities.
So how can we apply some of this history to our own lives today?
Well, one practical application is to maybe secularize the Puritan concept of a calling.
What do you mean?
Instead of just seeing your job as a paycheck, maybe view it as a chance to master a craft, to contribute something of value, to express your core principles through your work. It elevates the day-to-day.
From drudgery to dedication, I like that.
And then there's the town meeting. Now, it was flawed and exclusionary by our standards, of course.
Of course.
But it offers a model for grassroots civic engagement. It's a reminder that citizenship requires active, informed participation in local decisions. It's not just about voting every few years.
And maybe the biggest lesson is the cautionary one.
The dangers of certainty and intolerance. Absolutely. Salem is this stark, terrifying reminder of what happens when a community, convinced of its own righteousness and feeling threatened, throws reason and due process out the window in favor of fear and paranoia.
It's a powerful argument for maintaining critical thinking and a tolerance for ambiguity, especially when society feels like it's under pressure.
What really fascinated me, digging back into Bremer's work, was this paradox. They were trying to create a strict religious oligarchy, but their own practices.
Like what?
like requiring ordinary people to give conversion narratives or having congregations vote on their own ministers. Those things accidentally created the seeds of a democratic temperament. They created structures that valued consent and participation from the bottom up.
That's fascinating. They unintentionally laid the groundwork for the very thing that would replace them. For me, the final thought is that powerful tension between their utopian ideals and, well, human reality. There were these formidable figures trying to build a perfect society. But human nature, jealousy, ambition, simple disagreement always got in the way. Bremer shows their contradictions, their intolerance, alongside their role in creating liberty, are just so deeply woven into the American fabric. We're still grappling with their legacy.
And that, I think, is Bremer's ultimate conclusion. Historical reality is always infinitely more complex, more nuanced, more interesting than the simple stereotypes we inherit.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accotra Foundation.